Markets are as rocky as they've been any time this year. Inflation is showing signs of slowing down, and the tech industry is shedding thousands of jobs. On top of all of that, we're in for 2 years of divided government at the federal level. Democrats have the Senate, Republicans the House. So there's no shortage of things to talk about on today's episode of Market Sense. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jim Armstrong with Fidelity. To get the market's big picture today, we're going to be speaking with Lars Schuster. He's a friend of the show. He's been on many times in the past. He's an institutional portfolio manager here at Fidelity. And as we head into the holidays, we're also going to be talking about some ideas about annual giving. We'll discuss those with Leanna Davini. She's a Massachusetts-based branch leader. She's going to offer some guidance on giving to loved ones and possibly to charities as we approach the end of the calendar year. And we'll also talk about some other planning-related topics as well. Thank you both for making time to be with us on this holiday week.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving week.
Yes, great to be here. And I hope everyone has a great Thanksgiving.
Absolutely. Yeah, again, I know it's a busy week for everybody, so I appreciate you both carving time out of your schedules. It is the 22nd of November, Lars. Let's start with you, if we could. We have, as I just mentioned, seen some pretty big layoffs in the headlines recently. A lot of large tech companies announcing they're going to continue to eliminate workers. Certainly, I mean, there's a lot going on there, right? I mean, we look on from the sidelines and feel bad for people losing their jobs. But then we also wonder, you know, is our industry next, and or, you know, is this a sign of a recession or something bigger than what's happening just in the tech space?
Yeah, Jim, it's definitely concerning, and it certainly bears watching. And for all the individuals and I think families impacted by the layoffs at these tech firms, it is a travesty. But to your question, is it a harbinger of trouble for the broader U.S. labor market? Maybe not. Maybe let me give you a few reasons why. First, tech companies represent a pretty small percentage of overall employment in the U.S., somewhere in the low single digits, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Compare that to something like leisure and hospitality, which is about 10% of all employment. The second reason is that many tech firms really went on a hiring spree over the last 5 years, and in particular during the pandemic when we encountered this e-commerce boom. Now they're just simply cutting back some. There's been a downturn in revenues for many of these companies, and market valuations have fallen in 2022 as rates have risen. And the third thing I'd maybe point to is that many other industries are still struggling with labor shortages. In fact, when you look at job openings, they continue to far outpace the number of job seekers. And that really highlights a tightness in the labor market. And some of this is really being driven by aging demographics and slower pace of immigration. But we're also hearing evidence of some job hoarding by businesses. And so what I mean by that is just given the competitive job market, many companies have spent considerable time, energy, and money trying to hire workers over the last 1 or 2 years. And so given all that energy and time and money, they are just looking to hold on to those workers perhaps a bit longer than we've seen in past cycles. And maybe this is one of the reasons why what we're seeing is that weekly jobless claims continue to remain near historical lows, something I'm showing here on this graphic in front of you. This is looking at continuing claims. They're still down near 50-year lows. So all this being stated, we are closely watching the jobs picture because any rise in unemployment is one of those early signs of recession. And we have seen a very small uptick in weekly jobless claims, but not the sort of uptick that would really be consistent with an imminent recession.
Got it. Thank you for that. That's great perspective. I appreciate it. Leanna, speaking of tech companies and things making headline news, the CEO of a pretty big company recently announced that he's planning to give away almost all of his fortune, estimated at around $124 billion. Those of us who have maybe less to give, I mean, my charitable inclination is just a little bit south of $124 billion. What are options for people, especially at this time of year?
Yeah, I think you're not alone in that, Jim. but we do help individuals and families talk about your giving strategies. And for many people we talk to, it could be leaving a legacy, part of estate planning, but many want to give during their lifestyle while they're alive. So we'll start with within the family first. It's a couple items, then get to more charitable giving in a bit. Mm-hmm. But first, I'd say if you're a grandparent, we talk often about helping grandchildren, maybe it's pay for college. And you would do that with a 529 college savings plan. So that's a great way that has tax advantages. You have control, flexibility, and it also gives minimal impact on student aid. So the contributions you make to a 529 plan are after tax, but earnings and withdrawals are federal income tax-free when they're used for qualified educational expenses. So that could be tuition, it could be books, it's room and board, so it certainly runs the gamut there. What people will do is you can front load a 529 plan. So you can give up to 5 years worth of an annual gift in 1 year, or you could do the annual gift amount, which is $16,000 per year for this year, $17,000 for 2023. Another account, just briefly, is a custodian account. So you may have heard the acronym UGMA, UTMA account. Those are Uniform Gifts Minor accounts. That's separate from an educational account. So that makes it easy to just give financial gifts to a child. And it allows the adult, a family member, maybe a grandparent again, to open the account for a specific child. Then that adult can add money to the account. There's a various array of investments you can choose from stocks, mutual funds. And then generally when that child reaches the age of majority, which is 18 to 25, depending on the state, it then transfers to the minor when they're an adult for them to then have that asset. So two great ways if you want to give kind of while you're alive to your grandchildren, children, family members, the 529 account for education and the custodian account for all other things.
Great. I want to follow up with you in just a moment, Leanna, on other charitable giving, you know, outside of the family options that people might have. But before then, Lars, I want to sort of build on something Leanna was just describing there. I think it's fair to say a lot of our planning and investing decisions are really influenced by things like charitable giving guidelines or tax laws or big public policy changes. And so I'm curious what you think about, you know, with the divided Congress over the next couple of years, what's your sense of what that might mean for the markets and for other policy changes that in turn could influence our choices?
Yeah, so historically, markets have seemingly favored a divided Congress. Some of that just comes down to the fact that there's a smaller chance that Congress will pass meaningful legislation related to tax changes or spending. And while not everything is quite settled yet, we know enough of the outcome that Washington is unbelievably closely divided. And I think with this as a backdrop, it's unlikely we're going to see new taxes for businesses and individuals in the next year or two. It's also unlikely we'll see large spending packages. It's certainly not like what we saw in 2020 and 2021. So when you look at fiscal deficits as a percent of GDP, they're likely to actually recover next year. So the question here is, what could we see? And I do think it's distinctly possible that you'll see some renewed focus on defense spending, as well as partisan political and not policy debate. So here, when I say partisan political, I'm really thinking of things like debt ceiling fights, delving into the origin of COVID, maybe even discussing relations with China, just to name a few here. These are unlikely to probably bring about economic turmoil, but maybe some short-term market volatility could arise in those situations. So this is where politics can be a real challenge when investing. It really can be difficult to separate the news from the noise. And I like to say that a focus on policy over politics may be more prudent when you're investing. So while politics can elicit emotions and short-term volatility, policy or legislation that is enacted, that can have a much more meaningful impact on the pace of economic growth, the direction of corporate earnings. And really, those are the key drivers for stocks and bonds over time. So from this lens, I do think we should be mindful of the fact that over the last 12 months, we've had several pieces of legislation that were passed, including the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, the Inflation Reduction Act, and a few others. And I think when you put all those together, these bodies of legislation, they're all going to provide some spending to the economy spread out over a number of years that will be modestly supportive for growth and job demand over the next few years or so.
I like the mantra, I'll call it, of news over noise. I'm going to try to adopt that myself. It's good advice. Hey, Leanna, I wanted to double back on your conversation from a minute ago. You talked about giving to family if you're so inclined and you've got the resources to do so. How about, you know, other considerations at the end of the year, charitable giving, some people are thinking about for personal or maybe even tax reasons sometimes?
Yeah, we call this time of year the giving season, and charitable giving is a big part of that. So there are a few ways to give, and we help our clients maximize their giving, especially in regards to the tax deductions or advantages that there are. So I'll list a few. Most of these are requiring that you itemize deductions. So I think with any of this, just consulting with your tax advisor as well, just to be making sure you're doing it again the most efficient way. So first would be donating appreciated assets. So if you're itemizing deductions and you hold an asset for longer than 1 year, so think a stock or it could be a mutual fund, you're able to give that directly to charity and you would be able to deduct the fair market value of that asset without paying capital gains tax by donating it. So you're kind of off the hook for the capital gains tax that there are. And then you're able to do as much as 30% of your adjusted gross income. So that's one great way to give. Second would be just making cash contributions. So that's what we see often. We write checks, we give cash. That's where the stock piece is something worthwhile exploring. But for cash contributions, if you itemize deductions, you can give up to 60% of your AGI can be deducted for cash contributions made to qualified charities. Another one is bunching the charitable contributions. So similar to we talked about kind of giving in advance on the 529 front for front running college, you can make 2 years or more worth of charitable contributions as one. It's, again, itemizing deductions. And this could be advantageous because you can be getting a larger deduction by doing that versus splitting them over multiple years. Last, I'd just like to talk about is a donor advised fund. That could be a great way where you have a dedicated charitable fund that's maintained by a public charity or sponsored organization that would hold a donor advised fund. And this is exclusively dedicated to charitable giving. So you can contribute into the donor advised fund and then you can invest it and grow over time. But the moment that you give to that donor advised fund is when you get that charitable deduction. So again, a great way to possibly invest what you're giving. It grows tax-free and then give more to charity.
Amazing the number of options you have even in that. So thank you. While I have you here, Leanna, though, I'd love to sort of change the topic just a little bit away from giving and more to just about end of year planning. What's on customers' minds as they're coming to you and your team? And what are you telling them, especially given what a year 2022 has been? I'm sure folks are turning to you and your team saying, what's in store for 23? How do I prepare? What do I do?
We are getting a lot of that. And I think Lars's sentiment earlier, just on the noise over news, or Lars, you said it better, news over noise. It has been a tough year, 2022, yeah. And I think our emotions can certainly be tested. So what we talk with our clients is it really all comes back to your specific financial planning goals and needs. And when we build those comprehensive wealth plans for our investors, our goal is to really build you a plan that allocates your resources in three areas. So first, we want to make sure you have a plan for the unexpected. So having that emergency fund. Second, we want to make sure that you're having protection in your plan. That could mean very different things to different investors. And then last, we want to make sure that you have that diversified investment strategy that has that growth potential. So our clients that have had those three core components have been able to navigate uncertain times like we're in today. But just kind of breaking down those three, like that emergency fund, we know we're in high inflation. The Fed has been raising rates to combat that inflation. You want to look at where your cash is held. What rate are you getting? Because it's very competitive out there. So that's conversations we're having. On the protection side, we're seeing fixed income now be very more advantageous than it has been. So we're finally seeing not only the stability, but the income component of having fixed income. another conversation we're having with clients. And then that growth piece, that's that diversified portfolio that we want to make sure is built to you. So having that mix of stocks, bonds, short-term investments, that's well-diversified, that's rebalanced. These are all the components that we're talking about with our clients. And again, I think having those three areas of your plan has allowed clients to feel more comfortable and confident in times like this.
Crazy to think about how the conversation on fixed income has changed, right? I mean, just a couple, when we started the show back in 2020, I mean, what a different environment it was.
It really is. I think there was a lot of times in our client conversations where we almost had to convince clients of why we own bonds. You know, they're there for income and stability. And over the past decade, we're really only seeing the stability component. Now with the Fed raising rates, we're seeing them be far more advantageous.
Got it. Oh, speaking of which, Lars, no way you're getting off the hook without this question, which we pepper Yuri in with every single week. We're talking about the Federal Reserve and rate increases, of course, with the backdrop of inflation. Curious on your perspective here, what tea leaves can be read to suggest, are we nearing the end of interest rate hikes? Does the Fed get to say, we did it, everybody, it's time to celebrate? What's your sense of where we are?
Yeah, we're not quite there yet. And like you noted, you've been talking with Yuri and others about this all year. And it has been the number one question I think market participants have been trying to answer in 2022, and which is, when will inflation meaningfully ease and how much more will the Fed hike rates? And so, like I noted, I think it's very unlikely that we've seen the end of interest rate hikes. In fact, at this point, when you look at what the market expects, they're anticipating, and I would anticipate, to see something like a 50 basis point or a 0.50% hike in mid-December. And that's probably going to be followed by another couple of hikes in February and March. And maybe those might be of the 0.25% variety, but it's just a little early to tell. And that's because, you know, you got some areas of the economy that have slowed. And they could be in a recession-like type of phase, and that would be like housing. And there are some targeted layoffs, like we talked about earlier. But much of the U.S. continues to grow. We think we're in this late cycle expansion, and it's really been supported by consumer spending, particularly over the last several months in places like just dining out and traveling, services side of the economy. And only just recently have we seen some of that start to slow. So, and I think perhaps most importantly, when you think about the Fed and interest rate hikes, is it's about inflation. And at this point, inflation remains quite high. Now, I do believe that inflation is easing and it's just taking time. In fact, when inflation, you know, may not even get down to the 4-ish% range until maybe 12 months out from now. And historically, 4% is still pretty high. We are seeing improvements, though, in the prices of various goods like used cars and apparel, as well as, you know, supply chain issues have been improving. But there are stickier or more persistent components of inflation that have really taken hold. And here I'm thinking about real estate, rents, wage gains. And remembered what I noted earlier about the wage gains, we're in a very tight labor market. So until you start to see a little release of the tightness of the labor market, it's going to take a little time for the inflation numbers to really come down. So these are likely to ease, these areas, but it's just going to take several quarters. So with that as a backdrop, Jim, I think the Fed is going to stay pretty vigilant on this. They're going to keep rates at a higher level for longer than certainly we've gotten accustomed to over the last 10 years or so in order to bring prices down. I think it's also important to remember that at the same time, they're also shrinking their balance sheet through something called quantitative tightening. And so you collectively put those actions together and it may lead to slower lending, tightening financial conditions, and it could lead to higher unemployment. In other words, I think the longer inflation stays warm, there's the higher risk of recession. I think the good news is that the pace of Fed hikes may be slowing, and we very well may be closer to the end of this tightening cycle from the Federal Reserve than we were certainly 9-12 months ago. Now, from a market standpoint, stocks have been attempting to try to price in some of this slowing environment already, and that's kind of this up and down nature we've seen maybe over the last 3-4 months in the markets. From a bond market standpoint, I think we can take some comfort that markets have likely priced in much of the potential future Fed hikes. And while higher rates have certainly been painful for bond investors this year, the setup today is way better than 12 months ago. And that's a little of what Leanna was just talking about. High quality bonds today are displaying yields that we haven't seen in 15 plus years. And those higher yields can really help boost future total returns. And perhaps most importantly, they provide this cushion for portfolios should markets really remain volatile in the near term.
Really, again, thank you for that analysis. It's just amazing to reflect on how much things change and how quickly they change. So I appreciate, again, both you, Leanna, and Lars, spending time with us today to help us take a breath and figure out where we are in the grand scheme of things. For folks watching, if you're not already watching on a mobile device, you might want to grab your phone for more on what's happening in this volatile market, or if you're just looking for additional educational webcasts on a variety of financial topics, you can scan the QR code for on-demand education anytime. You can do that by opening the camera on your phone right now, hover over that QR code right there, and then just click on the link that appears, and it'll take you over to Fidelity's webcast hub, where you can find all of that on-demand education. Alternatively, you could just type in the web address that you see listed on your screen as well. And as always, we like to remind you, if you've got questions about making or updating a financial plan or asking some questions about how to stay on track with the one you may have made a while ago, Fidelity can help. Give us a call, go online, visit our website, download our app, tons of ways to continue to learn more. I want to thank Lars and Leanna for taking time to be with us again. I hope you both have a fantastic Thanksgiving. And as a reminder to people in the audience, we're not going to have a live Market Sense show next week on the 29th. We'll be off on an extended Thanksgiving break. Our next live show will be Tuesday, December the 6th, and we hope to see you then.
Information presented herein is for discussion and illustrative purposes only and is not a recommendation or an offer or solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Views expressed are as of the date indicated based on the information available at that time and may change based on market and other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC. To the extent any investment information in this material is deemed to be a recommendation, it is not meant to be impartial investment advice or advice in a fiduciary capacity and is not intended to be used as a primary basis for your client's investment needs. Fidelity and its representatives may have a conflict of interest in the products or services mentioned in this material because they have a financial interest in them and receive compensation directly or indirectly in connection with the management, distribution, or servicing of these products or services, including Fidelity funds, certain third-party funds and products, and certain investment services. Diversification and/or asset allocation do not ensure a profit or protect against loss.
You cannot invest directly in an index.
Stock markets are volatile and can fluctuate significantly in response to company, industry, political, regulatory, market, or economic developments. Investing in stock involves risks, including the loss of principal. Foreign markets can be more volatile than U.S. markets due to increased risks of adverse issuer, political, market, or economic developments, all of which are magnified in emerging markets. These risks are particularly significant for investments that focus on a single country or region. In general, the bond market is volatile and fixed income securities carry interest rate risk. As interest rates rise, bond prices usually fall and vice versa. This effect is usually more pronounced for longer-term securities. Fixed income securities also carry inflation risk, liquidity risk, call risk, and credit and default risk for both issuers and counterparties. Any fixed income security sold or redeemed prior to maturity may be subject to loss. Fidelity's Wealth Services provides non-discretionary financial planning and discretionary investment management through one or more portfolio advisory services accounts for a fee. Advisory services offered by Fidelity Personal and Workplace Advisors, LLC, FPWA, a registered investment advisor. Discretionary portfolio management services provided by Strategic Advisors, LLC, Strategic Advisors, a registered investment advisor. Brokerage services provided by Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, FBS, and custodial and related services provided by National Financial Services, LLC, NFS, each a member NYSE and SIPC. FPWA, FBS, and NFS are Fidelity Investments companies. Fidelity does not provide legal or tax advice. The information herein is general and educational in nature and should not be considered legal or tax advice. Tax laws and regulations are complex and subject to change, which can materially impact investment results. Fidelity cannot guarantee that the information herein is accurate, complete, or timely. Fidelity makes no warranties with regard to such information or results obtained by its use and disclaims any liability arising out of your use of or any tax position taken in reliance on such information. Consult an attorney or tax professional regarding your specific situation.
Before investing in any mutual fund, 529 plan, or exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for prospectus, fact kit, an offering circular, or, if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully.
Personal and workplace investment products are provided by Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC, 900 Salem Street, Smithfield, Rhode Island, 02917.